This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Bonnie North. Rachel Bloom might not be a crazy ex-girlfriend anymore, but the award-winning actress, songwriter, and comedian hasn't stopped performing. From the role of Silver in Angry Birds 2 to her own stage show, Rachel Bloom Live, Bloom is bringing her particular brand of humor and, in the case of the stage show, music to worldwide audiences. Rachel Bloom Live arrives at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee this Sunday evening. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski was able to catch up with Bloom earlier this week to find out more.
Rachel Bloom, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes to talk today.
It is my pleasure. Lovely to talk to you.
So your show and what you're best known for right now is Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and that show is all about how you can get in touch, you know, with your inner happiness and then actually execute it despite many obstacles of life. So now that that chapter of your life is complete, what is your live touring show's central question, or even your central question or mission as you're moving forward personally?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think the title of the live show, which is What Am I Going to Do With My Life Now, is basically that. It's. I mean, ultimately what it is the live show is a mix of a lot of stuff from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, some new stuff that I'm working on, and then some stuff I even did pre-Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So it's kind of, because that's the main question I've been getting now ever since the show ended, you know, like 6 months ago, is, okay, so what's next for you? And I'm just kind of like feeling it out, to be honest. There are a lot of choices open for me, and I'm getting almost like a little overwhelmed with the amount of choices. And so the live show is kind of that. It's really just, it's a mix of stand-up and songs, and a lot of the songs are going to be from Crazy Ex.
Well, right. So with this combination of things that you've done throughout your life, you know, you're representing yourself as a comic, but then you're also acting and representing Rebecca Bunch with those songs from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. How do you want to construct the show that can fittingly and properly juxtapose those two elements while bringing them all together?
Well, it's always me playing myself. So even when I'm singing songs that got well known for Rebecca singing them, I'm always now kind of playing myself interpreting these songs. So I think that's the commonality in all this, is there's little to no fourth wall. I love interacting with the audience. I love the shows being live. I love the shows changing as they go. And so that's really the only, like, that's the tonal commonality, is me just being in front of the audience acknowledging, hi, I'm Rachel, and I'm performing for you right now, you know?
Right, and some people or actors, you know, have their separate, their character sphere, and some are totally, like you, you know, transparent in representing who they are in a lot of their platforms. And I'm curious, when did you recognize, like, your talent becoming your identity, you know, moving past a passion that you had to being central to your creative content?
Yeah, I mean, I think around the time I started to realize that I could mix my loves of musical theater and comedy writing is around the time that I think I felt like I could finally fully embrace who I was and use my personal experiences and my personality in my comedy. And so I think accepting the kind of musical part of myself and not seeing the worlds of comedy and music as being separate and fighting each other, because oftentimes it's like, well, you got to choose musical theater or sketch comedy, and the answer is you don't, you can combine them, and that's more interesting actually, because you're not doing something where you're trying to do an impression of someone else's voice, you're doing your own voice. And so that kind of synonymous with finding my own voice was me making my personality and point of view a part of my performance. And I think that's something that always bothered me about musical theater was the kind of showy guise that you put up, that everything's a show, and God forbid your voice cracks, God forbid you make a mistake, and know that life is messy, and performers are people. And so I think that kind of emphasis on the pristine in musical theater informed how I like to perform music, which is the opposite.
Right, and I imagine there must have been a time where you must have felt disenchanted by that, quote, magic of Broadway and that need to be perfect in your performances all the time.
Yeah, well, because it's boring. I mean, I think that it's a mix of I went to school and I was suddenly faced with people who were more talented than I was. And in musical theater, there is somewhat, especially when you're young and studying it, your self-worth becomes synonymous with your talent, more specifically with, like, your vocal technique and your dance technique. And there is very little room for the nuances and imperfections of, like, how one person interprets something. If Bob Dylan auditioned for musical theater, he wouldn't get a single role. Bob Dylan does not have a technique-perfect musical theater voice. And so I think that first there was a fear, oh, I'm not good enough to be in this musical theater world. My technique isn't necessarily pristine enough. But then there came the realization of, oh, well, why is this such a fear of mine? Why do I feel the need to be perfect all the time? And finding my voice started with me feeling like I wasn't good enough for my goals. And so I said, okay, well, the least I can do is set out to do something individually that only I could do, that kind of made the threat of other people being more perfect lesser in my eyes. So it started out with being a little threatened.
And I think that's a good way to approach things like this. And coming to introduce, you know, and pitch a project like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend that hadn't really been done before, I imagine it turned out to be a strength.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way that we pitched Crazy Ex was, it was inspired by these music videos that I had been doing online. That at that point I had embraced putting my own point of view, putting my own vulnerability, putting my own personality into these videos. So by the time Aline Rosh McKenna found me and found my stuff, there was already this inherent tonal point of view to the songs that then made pitching the show not easy, but we had something to point to. It wasn't pitching out of thin air. It wasn't asking the executives to imagine a world in which we had music videos that both were homages to music and musical theater, but also took the piss out of them. We could point to these different genres. And so, yeah, the show was unprecedented, but luckily we had these videos to help back up our pitch.
Right, and along with those videos you created, you also have a range of writing experiences, you know, from short form and Robot Chicken all the way to, obviously, writing for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So how has that range influenced how you have approached your projects?
Well, every time you do a new project, you learn something new, and I think that a lot of the things that I learned from jobs, they're not necessarily specific lessons I can point to as much as you learn by osmosis. Just you learn from being around people who are more experienced than you. You learn from being around people who have different skill sets than you do. And it gives me an appreciation for, I mean, in a way, it gives me more options. It makes kind of all the options even more overwhelming, because if I was still just writing sketch comedy and I had an idea, I would always try to fit it within some sort of sketch brain. But now that I also want to be writing narrative TV shows and features, the options are kind of unlimited, which is really cool, but also can be overwhelming. And so I think that, like, more tools for your arsenal allows for more creativity, but also can lead to more choices that leave one paralyzed, like, writing-wise, I think at times.
Yeah. And just so the audience can kind of understand the range of writing songs that you had for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, there's about 157 songs total within that series. And I'm curious, what misconceptions are there about musical theater writing?
God, you know, I think that our show was unique in that we were so relying and going off of established tropes and then doing whatever the opposite was, or doing the trope fully and then the idea contrasting with the trope. But I think in general, the idea that it's easy and that you're going for something frivolous, I think that people automatically hear some stuff in a musical theater style and they think, oh, well, this song is going to be dumb and stupid and frivolous. And sometimes it's frivolity and sometimes it's meant to be escapist. So, you know, people now think about Rodgers and Hammerstein, and a lot of people think about The Sound of Music or Oklahoma as, oh, it's just like happy-go-lucky. But if you actually listen to those lyrics and also understand the context of Rodgers and Hammerstein at the time, it's quite revolutionary, and the lyrics and the music are brilliant. And I think that a lot of people who don't understand musical theater loop most musical theater into kind of this, like, do-do-do-ba-do-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do, you know, walking down the street with my tap shoes on, you know. And that is, some of it is that, but I think the idea that the goal is frivolity is a misconception. And so I think that that's why tonally our show was unique in even when we were taking the piss out of genres, we also had a great appreciation for them. I mean, when I was writing an R&H inspired song last season, I was listening to a lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein, and they were brilliant.
Yeah, and it's something about listening to a message through, you know, that happy, upbeat, quick tempoed pace that makes it perhaps a little more digestible. But when you do take the time to examine the lyrics or see what that message is, it can, you know, throw people off sometimes and, you know, make them see that a little differently. And with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, you know, you have songs about anxiety, depression, all sorts of other serious topics. But what do you think about turning these things into a song is a great way to, you know, not only break it down, but hopefully destigmatize these topics?
Well, God, I mean, from a comedic standpoint, first of all, I think songs, comedy songs, can be some of the most efficient forms of joke delivery that you have, because you're doing a sketch or you're doing a stand-up bit, but you have a structure where you inherently have to state your thesis, which is the chorus or the tagline, and then you support your thesis in the verses. And that's very, very, there isn't room, if you're doing it right, for rambling. All I can say is, as a writer, once I started mixing my love of comedy and musical theater, I felt like I could be vulnerable and open in a way that I couldn't before. And every culture across the world has music. Music is emotional. It's how we express ourselves. It's how we celebrate. It's how we mourn. So there is something inherently primal and universal about music that when you're then dealing with more serious topics or trying to put in more serious topics in a comedy song like we did, the transition is smooth because we're used to listening to music to emotionally relate to something.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, over the course of its four seasons, I think could definitely be considered, with its reputation as a cult show. Do you think that anything with the musical format, even if it's modified through a television episode, will always be alienating to audiences in some way?
No, I think that stuff with covers seems to work. I mean, Glee was by far from a cult show. I think the original format is alienating to some people, but then you look at a lot of media aimed for kids, and kids love original songs. So I think that, I don't know.
Do you think, compared to when you first started the pitch and now, that maybe that gap is being filled a little more?
I've heard of a lot of original musical shows being pitched. I have yet to see a lot surface. I think they're maybe getting scripts made or pilots made, but short of things like La La Land, which was technically post Crazy Ex had premiered, even though they've been working on that for years. I don't know. I mean, I was always surprised that the songs on our show didn't go more quote unquote viral. And I couldn't tell you why they didn't. All I can say is that we wrote to the top of our intelligence. I think that the hard part about musical stuff now is you're not only competing with everything on television, but more importantly, you're competing with everything on the internet. And the internet really is the place for musical comedy, because it's these short, you know, 2 to 4 minute videos that you can just watch on YouTube. And mostly the stuff that goes viral musically is stuff that's topical, because there's so much competition now for videos that are watched, for videos that go viral. The stuff that's like incredibly topical and like present in people's minds is going to go viral. So that makes it harder for comedy in general to like spread in a mainstream way. If you're writing a song that feels inherently timeless, there's going to be a topicalness to that song that you can never achieve. So it's, I don't know, these are questions I think about that I don't necessarily have answers to.
Well, and it'll continue to be a future challenge, right? As you move forward and figure out what's next for you and your projects.
Yeah, I mean, all I can do and all I've ever done was, anytime I've tried to write something that I thought would go quote unquote viral, or, oh, people are really going to relate to this and love this, it hasn't. 9 times out of 10. you can't predict what other people are going to like and relate to. All you can really do is write what you think is good, what you would want to watch, and what you would think is funny. And that's really all I can continue to do, is write the stuff that I would want to listen to and just hope that other people want to listen to it. And you're dealing with something incredibly subjective, especially in musical comedy. There are so many factors. I mean, I'm incredibly proud of this Hanukkah album, this album of Hanukkah comedy songs that I did, God, at this point, 6 years ago with my songwriting partner and my husband. And that is like very few people have heard that album, because it's very specific to like what we think is funny. You kind of have to be Jewish to appreciate it. But all I can do is write stuff that I'd want to see and hear. That's all I can kind of continue to do.
Well, I know what you've done so far has certainly resonated with people. And Rachel Bloom, thanks so much for joining me today for a little while to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me. This is lovely.
Rachel Bloom speaking with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. Bloom's show in Milwaukee, called Rachel Bloom Live, is this Sunday evening at the Pabst Theater. There is more information at wuwm.com.